The settling of Australia by the British was a very untidy affair. A motley crew of convicts and unruly sailors arrived in leaky boats to a very unhospitable landscape after a two-year trip from the other side of the world. David Hill's latest book, Convict Colony, is a warts-and-all account of the first few decades from the very moment they came ashore.
They unloaded the male convicts first, who had to start chopping their way because the bush came right down to the water's edge. And they found their English tools were too soft for the hard gum trees of Australia. So they slugged their way up the beach and planted tents. The women came ashore about 2 weeks later. And there's these famous descriptions of the orgy that took place, because particularly the seamen who had access to the rum, and they really got into it. And there are the various descriptions of an all-night orgy in a storm, because they didn't have enough tents for people to stay to shelter in anyway.
Isn't that such a great metaphor?
Yeah.
for Australia and what Australians love to do.
But the book, The Convict Colony, is really about just how hard it was. For decades, there was food shortages, the first harvest failed, half the farm animals wandered off into the bush and were lost completely. For literally decades, most settlers, whether they were convicts or not, had no chair to sit on, no table to eat at, and no bed to sleep in. They were short of everything, not just food and furniture. John Hunter, who became the governor after Arthur Phillip, 11 years after the arrival of the First Fleet, complained to London that the entire colony was naked, that they'd run out of clothes. And even though they'd asked for more, they hadn't received any for 2 years. The Marines were on sentry duty guarding the food stocks, bare feet, and they had no blankets. But what I like most is this description of John Hunter's, that that colony was entirely naked. I mean, the mind boggles.
It certainly does. Now, the other one thing was the role of women. 20% of the convicts were women, and they were a nuisance. They were a big trouble.
The only reason you can find for women being part of the First Fleet was to provide sexual gratification to the men. It was hard for everyone, but it was much harder for women, and particularly women with children. And it's estimated that over half the women in the colony were prostitutes. The male convict could eventually get a land grant, start a farm, start a business, and a lot of them became successful and wealthy businessmen. But women were really limited to being homekeepers or child carers. But the abuse of the women, that dreadful Samuel Marsden, who had the nickname the flogging parson, he made an observation. This is what he said. This is how bad it was for women. He said, "It's been a custom that reflects the higher disgrace on the British government that shortly after a ship has anchored in the cove, Sydney Cove, with female convicts, settlers, soldiers and prisoners have been permitted to go on board and make their respective selections among them, and to induce those unfortunate women, some by threats and some by promises, to accompany them to their habitation and to become their mistresses."
What were they thinking in Britain at the time, hearing these stories coming back?
I don't think they cared a great deal. It's funny you should ask that, because it wasn't until 1812, so this is a quarter of a century after the settlement, a House of Commons inquiry examined life in the new colony. So this is more than 20 years later. Now, there were two former governors who were still alive, John Hunter, and who was the second governor, and William Bligh, Captain Bligh of the Bounty. And both of them gave evidence to this inquiry, and both of them acknowledged that most of the women to survive had to become concubines or prostitutes. It was particularly stark when the term of their sentence had expired and men could work back as crew on ships or get a job and get the money to pay for a fare. But as Hunter told the inquiry, the only reliable way a woman could get back to England at the end of her sentence was to prostitute herself on the ship coming home. None of this was in any of the dispatches they sent as governors. This was all acknowledged, 10 and 20 years later.
The 26th of January has become such an important and divisive date these days. I mean, what do we celebrate? What do we commemorate? How do you feel about it, having done all this research and looked into the kind of ignoble beginnings of Australia?
Well, I can see why people would argue there's probably a better date in the calendar than 26th of January. It's not the date that the white fella came here anyway. The white fella settled here on the 18th to the 20th of January in Botany Bay, but found it a dud. And so they explored and then decided on about the 23rd that Sydney was going to be the location, and the fleet got here on the 26th. So it's only the arrival of Arthur Phillip and the First Fleet in Sydney on the 26th, a week later. So you could pretty well argue any date you like. I think the statue idea, I don't agree that we should knock down statues of Cook and Phillip and so on. That's part of our history. But Australia Day, I think there is some merit in choosing a day that isn't representative of the beginning of the dissemination of the Aboriginal civilizations that January the 26th obviously does to some people. So I think you could choose a better date than that.
David Hill, he's an historian, author, and he was former managing director of the ABC. His book, Convict Colony, is published by Allen & Unwin.